Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review dated May 24th. I will begin this portion of our program with a reading of the obituaries. Betty Lee Bandy, 90, of Arcola, died at 5:47 a.m. Sunday, May 22nd at Palm Terrace, Mattoon. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, May 27th at the Arcola Cemetery. Schrader Funeral Home in Arcola is assisting the family with arrangements. Memorials are suggested to the Arcola Public Library or Special Olympics. Edward August Beck, 88, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, May 21st, at St. Mary's Hospital. Edward's wishes for cremation will be arranged by Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. Private graveside services will be held at Fairlawn Cemetery. The entire obituary concludes with these words, "Go Badgers." Mr. Leonard Dwayne Cotton, Jr., age 72, passed away on Friday, May 20th, at Caramont Health in Gastonia, North Carolina. Memorials may be sent to the American Liver Foundation, 39 Broadway, Suite 2700, New York. The family will have a private memorial service for Mr. Cotton. There are no other mentions made of visitations or services. Margene S. Marge Niebuhr, 85, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, May 23rd, at her home. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, May 25th, at 11 a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, Decatur, Illinois, with visitation from 9 a.m. until service time. Burial will be in the Boiling Springs Cemetery, Decatur. Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are assisting the family with the service. Paul A. Scruggs, 45, of Decatur, entered eternal rest at 4:19 p.m. Saturday, May 21st, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Paul's life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, May 26th, at Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, May 25th, at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials in Paul's honor are suggested to his children's education in care of Chanel Scruggs. That's S-H-E-N-E-L-L. Daryl L. Sporleader, 70, of Stewartson, Illinois, died at 5:30 a.m. Sunday, May 22nd, in his residence. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday in St. Paul Cemetery, Strasburg, Illinois, with Reverend Stephen Becker officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Thursday in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Strasburg, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the St. Paul's Cemetery Fund. In the A3 briefs for Tuesday, there is this article from Mattoon concerning armed robbery arrests. Two people have been arrested on charges of armed robbery involving a knife. Tierra R. Ferris, 24, and Jared Sykes, 24, were arrested at 4:15 a.m. Monday on charges in connection with an alleged armed robbery at 2109 Marshall Avenue. Ferris and Sykes allegedly lured a man to their residence with the intentions of taking his narcotics. The charges also allege that a knife was used during the crime. No injuries were reported. Ferris and Sykes were transported to the Coles County Jail pending the filing of formal charges. Here's an article of local interest on page A5. Dateline is Decatur. Headline, Pedal Boat Rental to Launch in Lake Decatur. Boatless but, this was written by Allison Petty. Boatless but ready to enjoy a sunny day on Lake Decatur? A new local business can help. Macon Waves Pedal Boat Rental will open for its inaugural season Saturday, May 28th, offering pedal boat or paddle boat rentals at the docks in front of the Beach House restaurant in Nelson Park. Prices range from $12 for half an hour to $27 for the day. Owners David and Shirley Harden plan to rent the boats from noon to 7 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays throughout the summer, as well as the Memorial Day holiday. During weekday evenings from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m., they will maintain their Tandemonium bike rental business in Fairview Park. Quote, it's all about bringing families back to Nelson, back to Fairview, and get them from behind the electronics, David Harden said. Both businesses operate through an agreement with the Decatur Park District, with the district receiving 5% of the revenues. Executive Director Bill Clevenger said the paddle boats are an exciting amenity that give people another opportunity to engage with the lake. The district in recent years has pursued a long-term plan to transform the Nelson Park area into a hub for recreational opportunities. It's one of those partnerships that allows us to provide a recreational opportunity that we wouldn't otherwise be able to provide on our own, Clevenger said. Macon Waves has 5 Sun Dolphin Sun Slider pedal boats available for rental. They can seat a minimum of 2 and maximum of 5 people. Riders will be required to wear life jackets and must remain within a certain distance of the shoreline with the boundary marked by buoys. Children should be mature enough to behave safely on the boats. David Harden said the tandem bike rental business has been doing well since he and his wife opened it in 2012. Though he doesn't want to flood the shoreline with bikes, Harden said they would likely bring the popular quad bike to the Nelson Park area for rentals on weekends. Quote, we want it to be safe. We want it to be fun. We want to pull families together out of the houses, get them out maybe on Saturdays and Sundays once the weather gets nice, he said. We'll get people back outside, hopefully, to do a little something. A photograph shows the rental owner, David Harden, who is launching one of his 5 pedal boats, which is, by the way, covered with a nice sun awning. And he's being assisted by Ryan Raleigh of the Decatur Park District, who appears to be pushing him off into the water, pushing the boat off into the water. We'll see what Jean Phillips, writing as Abby, has to say, or what her readers are writing to her. Here's the first letter. Dear Abby, a coworker has been diagnosed with terminal cancer. She's not sure how long she may have. She is relatively young, so it's tragic. We have excellent insurance from work, national health care, and disability insurance. Another coworker sent out an email with a link to a crowdfunding site, as well as an invitation to a party selling products. The proceeds will be donated to fulfilling a cancer bucket list, which includes pampering, trips, and other luxuries. I sympathize with anyone having a terminal illness, but why does that mean I have to give money? Do they have a right to be pampered on other people's dime? This kind of fundraising without real financial need seems to happen often. Co-workers who have had accidents, fires, unexpected or stressful incidents, all have office collections set up, even when they are fully insured and the damage is covered by their policies. A friend, or human resources, contacts everyone who has had even a passing interaction with the individual and solicits donations. I am happy to write letters and notes to people I know are having a hard time. I visit with closer friends and may bring a meal or flowers to their house. But people I've spent only a few hours of my life with asking for money for luxuries seems nervy to me. Am I a tightwad, or is a financial donation necessary to express condolences? And this letter is signed Tightwad in Canada. Here's Abby's answer. Dear Tightwad, because you receive a solicitation does not mean you are obligated to respond to it, unless the solicitor is holding a gun, in which case I would always advise you not to argue. Whether to make a donation for something like this is your choice, and if you choose not to join in, you should not feel or be made to feel guilty if you decline. Here's the next letter. Dear Abby, my daughter is being married in June. Her father, my ex, has let her know she must invite his new wife's parents to the wedding. They are drinkers and have in the past been very rude to my daughter. She has no relationship at all with them and doesn't want them at her wedding. She is aware that this will cause hard feelings with her stepmother and her father. My soon-to-be son-in-law called me asking for advice. I said maybe they should be invited to keep peace in the family, but my daughter is very upset at the idea of having these people around on her special day. Any advice? Signed, Wedding Invite in Wisconsin. Dear Wedding Invite, your ex-husband's new in-laws are not related to your daughter and do not appear to have made an effort to befriend her. Because of that, I see no reason why they must be invited unless your ex is footing the bill for the wedding. If this is the case and the wedding is a large one, the couple could be seated in Siberia, which might be a less than satisfactory but workable solution. Why they would insist on coming under these circumstances, I can't say. But some people will do almost anything for a free dinner. Mary Hunt has this interesting article. It's headlined, Why Buy When You Can Borrow? A recent story in Time, finally an app that lets you borrow a corgi, made me smile. It seems you can now borrow a dog. In this case, borrow means renting by the hour. If you can't afford to own one, don't have room for one, lack the commitment to own one, or want to take a particular breed for a test drive as part of the doggy decision-making process. Besides apps, many public libraries are becoming a fantastic source for borrowing unusual items you may need only once a year, or even less frequently. Why buy when you can borrow for free? And here are the examples that she gives. The Ann Arbor District Library in Ann Arbor, Michigan, offers lots of unusual stuff to lend to its patrons. AADL lendables include art prints ready for hanging, Sizzix Big Shot die cutting kits, book clubs to go for kids and adults with 10 copies of a featured book, a DVD to go with if available, and a resource folder with summaries, reviews, and discussion questions. Games of every imaginable size and type, home tools, music tools, unusual and fun musical instruments, science tools, the kind that help students do cool science projects, and a variety of telescopes. The Marvin Memorial Public Library in Shelby, Ohio, lends its vast collection of character cake pans. With a library card, a patron can borrow a pan for one full week at no charge. That should be plenty of time for a couple of practice runs making the best birthday cake ever. Plus, you'll keep the $25 it would cost to own and store a cake pan you may never use again. The Blasco Library in Erie, Pennsylvania, loans out fishing poles and tackle boxes, while both the Chicago Public Library and New York Public Library provide digital hotspots so patrons can access mobile broadband internet at home or on the go. The Pima County Public Library in Tucson, Arizona, has seeds of hundreds of types of vegetables, herbs, and flowers that patrons can take home and plant in their garden. You can't return them like books, of course, but the library encourages borrowers to keep and donate seeds from their grown plants. The Oakland Public Library in California has a variety of carpentry, masonry, plumbing, electrical, and landscape tools to lend out. On page 8, Tony Reed has this article that has a dateline of Macon. Three suspects use Macon motel room for meth. Three people were arrested Sunday after police claim they broke up a methamphetamine manufacturing operation being run out of a Macon motel room. The suspects are a 25-year-old man from Macon, a woman aged 47 from Atwood, and a 41-year-old female from Macon who was apparently living in a room of the Macon motel with the male suspect. All three were booked into the Macon County Jail on charges of possession of methamphetamine manufacturing material, possession of meth precursor ingredients, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Deputies from the Macon County Sheriff's Office had been called to the motel at 10:30 a.m. by the manager, who said the tenants in the room had not paid their bill and he wanted them thrown out. While they were on their way, the police were told there was a suspicion the occupants were making or in possession of methamphetamine. Deputies checking out the room found the 47-year-old woman inside, who allegedly tried to conceal in her pants a pipe used for smoking drugs. Police said they also seized a small amount of cannabis. The other suspects, who had earlier left in a car, then returned, and their vehicle was pulled over. Quote, one of the deputies who was there had a canine, and the canine did a free air sniff around the vehicle and indicated a possible presence of illegal drugs, said Lieutenant Jamie Belcher. Police seized a drug smoking device, that's in quotes, and a small amount of cannabis. Belcher said the motel room was later searched, and that is when deputies allegedly discovered chemicals and materials used to cook methamphetamine. Quote, they also found lidocaine patches, another controlled substance, and some other miscellaneous drug paraphernalia, added Belcher. Our next article is not local. It is an AP article from Newton, Massachusetts, but it seems of interest to all. The headline is Hospice Choirs Bring Comfort. The singers enter single file, taking slow, deliberate steps as they intone a soft melody. Norman Doling, an 85-year-old who recently suffered a stroke, is there waiting, an audience of one, eased into a recliner in the home where he's lived for decades in the Boston suburbs. Quote, "I guess I lived too long," he jokes in a halting voice after the group finishes serenading him. Quote, "It was very charming. I have a great deal of appreciation. It was very nice of them to come and sing to an old man." The eight, mostly older women, are members of Journey Songs, one of hundreds of hospice choirs across the country and world. The all-volunteer a cappella groups sing, when invited, at the bedsides of the elderly and terminally ill in hospitals, nursing homes, and private residences. They offer calming melodies meant to bring comfort to relatives, caregivers, and their loved ones. Quote, "We're all about doing peaceful, quiet, and uplifting songs," said Kate Mason, the coordinator for Journey Songs. "It's almost as good as a touch. We touch people with love through our music." Jean Doling says she invited the choir as a way to brighten the day for her mostly bedridden husband, who had worked for decades at MIT. Quote, "It just described what we're experiencing," said the 83-year-old Doling, after the group quietly files out of the house. "Norman is a very happy, content person. We're experiencing the autumn of our life, and we're doing it together." Singing to the dying has been done for centuries worldwide, mostly in the privacy of people's homes, said Kate Munger, founder of Threshold Choir, a Santa Rosa, California group that's credited with helping launch the modern hospice choir movement. But as end-of-life care moved to hospitals and nursing facilities, those traditions eroded, she said. Hospice choirs are, in some ways, trying to fill that void. Quote, "It's difficult and challenging work, but it's also deeply satisfying," Munger says. "People don't sign up for this unless they're sure this is something they're called to do." Munger formed her group in 2000 after singing to a dying friend with AIDS. The nonprofit organization now has more than 100 chapters across the U.S., Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. On the opinion pages, Patricia Casterberry of Decatur has written a very personal letter to the editor regarding the budget impasse in the state of Illinois. There are other editorials in the newspaper regarding that, but I thought this was an interesting letter to read. Here's how it goes. "This budget impasse is not only affecting universities and state workers, it is pushing families like mine further into poverty. I am a single mother of two boys. I work full-time, and so I depend on child care services provided by the state. Recently, because of Governor Rauner, my child care coverage has been diminished, and my copay is unaffordable. Each month, I have to make decisions about whether to pay my child care provider or to buy shoes, clothes, and other needs for my children. It is insulting that I have to make these choices on a daily basis when I live in Illinois, one of the richest states in the country. I am constantly worried about how I will keep my job without childcare assistance, and I worry about my lights, gas, phone, and water bills, and whether or not they will be cut off because I am constantly late or skipping one of them to pay the other, and vice versa. I am being pushed to the edge and worried that soon I won't be able to pay rent, buy food, and support my kids. I am doing everything I can. I have a good job that I enjoy. I have a beautiful family that I love, but I don't know what else I can do. I've started talking with other families in our community also being impacted. We have to get together and force our legislators to do the right thing and pass a fully funded budget without cuts. For families like mine, passing a fair budget is quickly becoming a matter of survival. And this letter, again, was written by Patricia Casterberry of Decatur. And the newspaper's editorial today has this headline, "Our Views, Don't Let Madigan Keep the Status Quo." House Speaker Michael Madigan doesn't care that most Illinois residents want the state to change the way it draws its legislative maps. He also doesn't care that a citizens group raised $3.6 million and recently delivered twice the number of signatures required by law in a single binder that stands 35 feet tall. All Madigan cares about is retaining his power in the Illinois General Assembly and his stranglehold on state government. Independent Maps, a nonpartisan group, delivered the petitions last week to the Illinois Board of Elections. That board now has to validate the signatures, most likely under a challenge orchestrated by Madigan. Madigan has also challenged the amendment in court. Well, actually, the challenge was filed by Michael Casper, general counsel for the Democratic Party, of which Madigan is the chairman. The framers of the Constitution in 1970 were careful about how citizens could place amendments on the ballot, but those intentions have been twisted to prevent any substantial change from going to the voters. The writer then describes the problem that the legislators have with map drawing and concludes with this. Poll after poll shows residents in favor of a fairer map-making process. This is the citizens' third attempt at change since 2010. Illinois government needs a ton of reforms, but this is the one that would make the most difference. The courts should recognize that this is a fair attempt to amend the Constitution and deny Madigan's challenges. Madigan has every reason to protect the status quo, but the status quo has resulted in a dysfunctional, broken government. And again, that is the headline editorial view for today. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 24th, 2016. I look forward very much to reading with you again next week.